Okay, third time's a charm.
Okay, I call the meeting to order at, what is it, 6:37? Roll call.
Okay, David Hallman, he's on his way. Mike Gable?
Here.
Greg Retzlaff?
Here.
Anita Johnson?
Here.
Aaron Decker? Oh, she's excused. Leah Blau?
Here.
David Arrington? We never hear from David, okay. Julia Alberth? She's excused. And Brianna Ayers?
Here.
I think David was even on this.
Citizen comments. Are you a citizen?
Are you a citizen?
Or sit, so stand.
Whichever you prefer.
Is it like executive where I state my address? Or do I?
Yes.
Okay.
You gotta give your name, address.
You can sit if you want. You don't have to stand.
Megan Jacket, 7314 7th Avenue. A lot of new faces. Okay. Was everyone on the county board last year during... Okay. The Stop, Look, and Listen project the homeless, that was me.
Yeah.
And I'm looking to continue it into this coming summer. I just finished this January interning at the Minnesota State Department of Health and Human Services as a policy intern, getting their group residential housing reform underway. It was just approved for the governor's budget, so I was really excited to be a part of that and improving the lives of the homeless in the Twin Cities, helping them get more access to housing in those areas, especially in Hennepin County. So while I was there, I learned a ton of stuff, and we'll be hopefully continuing that experience into this summer as a policy intern for housing, either with the Minnesota State Department or a different nonprofit organization in the cities. But I'm wanting to take everything that I'm learning in Minnesota and bring it back to Kenosha come August. And with my Stop, Look, and Listen project that I did last summer, it was great, and I met all the targets that I wanted to, hit all my goals, except for the big finale, which I wanted to ultimately host a roundtable discussion where I brought the people I interviewed and brought leaders in Kenosha County Health and Human Services, like board members, social service directors, mayor, just people that whose decisions affect the homeless, and do like a brown bag lunch presentation, etc. And I'm still looking to do that, instead carry it over to this summer and then do a component where I track down the homeless people I interviewed last year and say, how has your situation improved? Do you feel good about any changes that have been made, especially with the Shalom Center site being approved? But the only problem that I'm running into, and I'm being very proactive about it, is how to fund it, because last year funding the Stop, Look, and Listen project initially was a struggle because it was inspired by my study abroad experience in Northern Ireland, which happened at the end of May, and then coming back it was like, okay, how do I now fund this project that I want to start in August? So I'm seeking a grant through the Kenosha Community Foundation, but they really prefer people to be under an organization. I thought about partnering with the Shalom Center, except for I have not been able to contact anyone for the last 2 weeks. I think that it's really kind of complicated in terms of having the director issue going on right now of who we're going to hire. I was thinking about doing the Outreach Center, but they already receive a grant through the Kenosha Community Foundation, and I hate to complicate things and maybe like take money that they would receive to go to their employment service programs, their prescription subsidies in the summer camp. So I'm looking for advice from anyone as who I could partner with in terms of an organization or just someone who's already established in Kenosha Health and Human Services, whether it's like a prominent individual or an existing organization, to just be like my name, I guess you could say, because you also have to be a 501c3 organization. I'm Megan Jacket. I'm a college student. I wish I were a 501c3 organization. I feel like one sometime. I'm nonprofit. So that's where I'm at right now. I have my business cards here. There's one for everyone. Here's the next one for David. But yeah, I guess I'm just looking for advice. I know what I want to do. I have the plan. I guess you could say I'm just looking for a sponsor, someone to put on.
You need one more, Megan.
One more? Okay.
Oh, never mind. I can't count.
Okay.
Publish.
Just say that I counted. But yeah, just essentially a name I could go under in order to do this project. Because the reason why it took so, it had to happen pretty last minute during the summer was because the whole 3 months getting the project ready also involved getting $800 in donations to have the booklets funded, to have the booklets printed, have them distributed. And that's why it took so long and the roundtable discussion ended up not happening. So I'd love to get the grant right on the table right now in February. I'd fill out the application. I've already started filling out the application. I just need a sponsor organization.
Have you considered walking in my shoes?
Yes. That's, they, I've worked with Joe before, and they, I guess I, that's another thing is that I want to go through an organization that's already pretty well like established. I know she struggles a lot to get grants, and it is really difficult. I mean, she is the organization. She's one single individual, which is unbelievably admirable, but again, I'm trying to organizations that already have to really, really struggle to get grants. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want me to go in and complicate things and be like, well, we're already giving you grant money to fund this little college students project. Like, now that's going to cut off. I'm only looking for probably $1,000 at the very most, just
how much?
To have
$1,000.
Because I want, I'd use one of the new rooms in the outreach center that in their new building, and then it's just looking to cover the costs of a food, a lunch caterer, probably by Southport Pantry. I have a good relationship with them. And then drinks, because it would be a lunch activity. And then I'd also do, get some research, do a nice presentation, and then I'd like to do like color booklets accompanying it as well. Some similar to last year as well.
So have you talked to Mark Midori on the Shalom Center board? He used to be a county board supervisor some years ago. And
do you want his number?
Yeah,
yeah.
We have his number.
Okay, it's Mark Midori, M-O-M-O, go ahead. M-O-O.
No, M-O-D-O.
Okay. And my phone's never right. The number is, his house number is 262-654-6752. And his mobile is 262-496-9964. And Jen, is there any other agencies you can think of?
I would think our best ties are with the Shalom Center.
Well, I'm going to call Mark as soon as we leave here, and I'm going to tell him that you're going to reach out to him. Okay,
okay. Yeah, and it's complicated because I'm here until Friday, and then I go back to school, and even on our spring break, I was selected as a St. Olaf student to travel to Washington, D.C., and do some policy networking for possibly after graduation for doing some homeless policy. Because the problem is I'm not here again until, like, May. So I'm trying to get, like, everything all online from now until then.
Give Mark a call.
Yeah, he's really good.
I will. And then,
he'll be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I feel like especially Shalom Center,
you know,
it's
literally... Give him my name that I turned you on to him, and he can throw stones.
Oh, is he currently on the board, or is he...
He's on the board.
The Shalom Center. Yeah. He was a county board supervisor, but...
He still sits on joint services to the county.
Yeah, he's on a couple of...
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yes.
Did we already...
Yes, we're in citizen comments.
Okay, thank you all very much for waiting.
We didn't.
Didn't really come.
I noticed. I usually wait for all of you, but that's okay.
Wasn't me, just for the record.
We'll find out who it was. Check the audio. I'll make a suggestion to you. If you're feeling really ambitious, which I would encourage anyone to be, as I think you are, I might suggest contacting Sean Donovan, the former Secretary of HUD, now that he's no longer in the Obama administration, simply because he obviously knows stuff, you know, probably a lot more than many of us in this room. And I think, you know, when cabinet secretaries leave their post, certainly he was Housing Commissioner of New York, he might be a really good resource. Mm-hmm. And you never know when you reach out that he may actually respond personally. You might get lucky. So mm-hmm. I would definitely try it.
Because even if it's just like tiny, tiny grant programs that are just for like independent homelessness awareness projects like this. I mean, again, $1,000 max. Like last year I was able to make a lot happen on just $800. So this year I'm looking for $1,000 just so that it's not so like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to fund this? So,
I wouldn't mention the money. I'd mention the project and see maybe what it is he's got to say.
Okay.
Because that, something might surface out of that that might somehow address that question.
Okay, perfect. I will follow up on those two. And thank you very much for the advice. And have a good rest of the meeting.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I'm assuming we're on agenda item number 5?
No, on agenda item, we're still on citizen comments. That was the citizen comment.
Ah, okay. I was waiting for somebody to fill me in, but nobody wanted to be ambitious.
We don't want to give ourselves away.
We did tell you we were on citizens' comments. You just didn't hear it.
Sorry. I'm trying to find myself. Are there any other citizens that wish to address the committee? Okay. Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of January 5th, 2015?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gable, second by Supervisor Blau. Youth and Governance?
Yes.
Committee?
Yes.
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 Chair votes aye. Minutes are approved. Agenda item number 4, approval of county executive appointments as follows. Supervisor Mike Gable and Rick Dodge to the Human Services Board. James Schmidt to the Veterans Service Commission. I'm going to butcher this on audio. I feel horrible. Herschel, help someone.
Riles.
Riles, thank you. Julie Ray Friedman and Janice Erickson to the Commission on Aging. Does anyone want to give a... like upset everybody in the room that we all want to be quiet now? Like, it's just, does anybody want to formally present these folks? Do we have questions? Is there a motion to approve? What do we want to do here?
I can address 3 of them
if you like. Sure.
Don't you need a motion?
Well, would you want to let her talk first? I mean, usually that's what we do, and then we move forward, you know.
Well, I know each of these individuals. Herschel Riles, this would be his second term on the Commission on Aging. We're limited by Wisconsin Elders Act to 2 3-year terms. Herschel has been a regular member and a contributing member, in fact has been chair of our commission, and so we'd love to have him continue to be part of our organization. Julie Ray Friedman had been on the commission, had to go off for a year, but is very anxious to participate again. Herschel is he's a retired pharmacist. Julie is a retired nutritionist or dietitian, and has been active in the all group Adventures of Lifelong Learning at Parkside. Janice Erickson has just retired from a 27-year, I think, career as a benefits specialist, elder benefits specialist. She's the person who, for all these years, has conducted Medicare workshops throughout Kenosha County, and is anxious. Happy in her retirement to get involved in volunteer and advocacy work.
Questions?
None for me. So I make a motion that we approve those 3 individuals.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Retzloff. Who wants to second?
Go ahead. Nope. Just as long as it gets seconded.
Motion by Supervisor Johnson.
Speed it up, not tie it down.
Youth and Governance?
Yes.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. That was all of them at once, correct?
Yes. All 3 that she presented.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the others, of course, Supervisor Gable and Dodge are both here and participated on our Human Service Board. Are up for another selection round. Supervisor Gable was a citizen representative until he joined the ranks of supervisor again, so he'll fill the need as a member of this committee and also sitting on a Human Service Board, which is a requirement we have, and Supervisor Dodge has been a member. James Schmidt for the Veteran Service Commission is a reappointment. He's been doing that for a number of years.
Questions for Supervisor Dodge? Good evening.
I can speak on behalf of James Schmidt. I attend most of those Veterans Service Commissions. He's a representative from the American Legion, and exceptionally good for this appointment because he has taken his own time to resolve problems that some of the veterans have with the cars would break down. He'd find a mechanic that would donate his time or do it for a reduced price, and does a lot on his own, and a really, really dedicated person. And I think it would be a loss not to approve him. So I hope you approve Mr. Schmidt, Veteran Service Commission.
For a minute, I thought you were going to speak on behalf of yourself.
Oh.
I don't think anyone's done that. It'd be kind of cool.
We wouldn't have any good thing to say.
Oh, God. Okay. In the words of former County Board Chairman Joe Clark, what is the pleasure of the committee?
Motion to approve all three.
Yeah, I second that.
Okay. Motion by Supervisor Johnson, second by Supervisor Blau, Youth and Governance. Minnie?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Are we okay tonight? Everybody's very hesitant.
I think we're all tired from shoveling snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly it. I'm exhausted.
Protein shakes for everybody. Agenda item number 5, presentation, Aging and Disability Resource Center Services. Good evening, Ms. Giles. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. A little sore from shoveling, but.
See?
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad you had a spot on the agenda for me to tell you a little bit about the Aging and Disability Resource Center. I think as much as you hear generally about it or where that it exists, I don't know how much detail you know about what we do. So I'd like to just take you to a little bit of the history and then go over very quickly what we do, and I can always come back and give you more detail if you like. I started with the logo. If you look at the PowerPoint handout, I understand that PowerPoint doesn't always work here, so I didn't want to play with that and just giving you a handout. The ADRC logo is actually required by the state with the funding that we get, and it's because they've now kind of branded the ADRC's Aging and Disability Resource Centers throughout the state, so that their hope is that it's easily recognized as a place to go for information and assistance about elder and disability services.
Ms. I apologize. Do you want to wait till we sign that so you have our undivided attention? Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah, you have to sign it.
Yeah, just keep going. Just
kind of, you'll sign all that.
Otherwise, it's just...
I enlisted for how long? I says I enlisted for how long?
Oh.
Just so that the committee is aware, I don't know if she informed anybody else, but Supervisor Decker will not be joining us this evening. This is probably already it. She sent me an email. Supervisor Arrington, I don't believe I have anything, but I'll check after this meeting just to make sure.
This is the state required logo we're looking at now. Aging and Disability Resource Centers throughout the state, either as multi-county or single county entities. All of our funding, our budget this year is is it 1.9 million, and none of that comes from county levy. Over the years, the program has grown so that most of the bulk of the dollars, 1.1 million, are state resource center funds. Then we are able to, with time reporting, draw down Medicaid match. And then we have some of our federal Older Americans Act monies that go into the program. And then we have a grant, a foundation grant, and a trust fund that provides some of the dollars.
How much more is that than past year? Is that same, similar, less, more?
Well, the state allocation has been the same for a number of years. We have been real successful in pulling in the Medicaid match, improving our time reporting every year to draw down that. The Older Americans Act funds have been pretty stagnant. Grant funds go up and down depending on what's available. Actually, we go back to around 1978 when we were the Department on Aging, and that was created by the county board. And this is part of it started with the Older Americans Act, which will be celebrating its, I think, 50th anniversary this year. And then, so under the Older Americans Act, it called for aging units throughout the country and area agencies on aging, and it started out as a small department running the meals, or at that time I think it wasn't even Meals on Wheels program, the senior dining program, and a couple of small programs. In 1988, with the county executive's initiative at that time, we created the Center for Aging and Long-Term Care, and part of it was that at the time, we were the Department of Aging contracted out all of its services, but they were located in different places where the agencies resided. And I think he was tired of people calling and complaining that why do they have to go to different offices for the services that they needed. And so in 1988, we created the Center for Aging and Long-Term Care, and then where we brought together under one roof some of the county staff, the small number of county staff that we had, and the some of our contracted agencies, and the some staff at the Department of Social Services that worked with the elderly. And we were really innovative at that time. It had not been done before. So we really became the model by which the state eventually developed the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. And then in 1998, the state came up with dollars, and that really helped push us to be able to provide more services. We were one of 10 pilots in the state, and now, of course, there are ADRCs throughout the state. That was one thing that had, throughout the years, had bipartisan support, and the one thing that people wanted to see happen, so that people had a place to go for the information and services that they needed. I put on the in that organizational chart, I know it's pretty tiny to try to read, but just to highlight that our entity within the county is the Division of Aging and Disability Services under the Human Services Department. And then we have kind of four major service areas: the Aging and Disability Resource Center, our other community services for the elderly and disabled, Adult Protective Services, and mental health service and AOTA service array. Today I'm just going to talk about the highlighted area under the Aging and Disability Resource Center, and sometime if you invite me back, I'll talk about the other programs. So our target population is older adults, adults with physical and developmental disabilities, people with dementia, memory loss, children from high school who are transitioning with disabilities, who are transitioning from children's services to adult services, family caregivers, guardians, and then the community in general. Our first kind of line of help is with information and assistance, the people who answer the calls from the public about a whole variety of services. And you can see over the years that the number has climbed. And people call about an array of things, basic needs, financial service benefits, health insurance, food, shelter, long-term care or in-home services, housing residential options, our equipment loan closet, caregiver assistance, health-related legal programs like guardianship, power of attorney for health care, et cetera. Transportation is a big one. Also education, recreation, volunteer opportunities.
Do you help, do people have to be, do the adults have to be disabled? Or not necessarily, is it open for, I mean?
Well, it depends. We have a lot of people who call for information, for assistance, so no, they don't have to be, they might be calling for a family member or information in general. As far as eligibility for most of our services, yes, they would be normally either have a disability or dementia or age-related illness.
It was 12,999, not an even 13?
Not an even 13.
How is the transportation going?
Pardon me?
I mean, we used to do the transportation.
Yes.
County. Mm-hmm. Now we're involved with the state system, or?
That's.
I've been hearing.
Well, not with the state so much as, and we can talk more about that maybe in more detail in another meeting. We have, we do get a state grant. It's the, it's referred to as 8521 money. It's part of the state transportation dollars for, it's elderly and disabled transportation. What we've done, and it requires some county match, and what we've done though is, with that money we fund the caravan through the Kenosha Achievement Center. We fund volunteer transportation, which is run by CAFASI, Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services. And then we also use the dollars, those state dollars, as a match to draw down the dollars that we have for the Western County transportation. So we use that as match, and we're able to then get that grant for rural transportation. And that has gone down a little bit since the original grant, the available dollars, but so far we've been able to keep that going.
Do we anticipate to be able to continue to do that in the future? I know transportation funding at the state and federal level is being very much discussed right now. It's too early to tell.
So far, so good. I mean, certainly we would love to see a coordinated transportation system. It's really difficult with when you have rural transportation separate from city transportation. Certainly our preference would be to see that better consolidated. When you have, you know, dealing with those borders are always problematic. People don't travel the way that our systems are set up. With the okay, and then so people get calls for information and assistance. We also do long-term care consultation and enrollment in some of the publicly funded programs, long-term care programs. One of the things that we do, and why I think it's important for people to call us, is that we can provide free and unbiased information about people's options for long-term care. We're not selling a assisted living, we're not selling a nursing home, we're not selling home health care, but we can try to help people navigate that world so that they understand what their options are. Sometimes people think that nursing homes are the only option, or that assisted living is the only option, and that's not the case. So we try to help them through that. Whether they're looking at private pay, or in fact, we hope that they'll call us when they're at the private pay basis, so that they can better informed as to how to use their own money too.
Again, I'm going back to my other question. This is just for disabled adults or seniors. This long-term care consultant enrollment service, or is that?
Well, it would be for people who would be eligible if they are elderly, if they have a a disability, a physical disability, or a developmental disability, if they have dementia.
So elderly by itself or elderly with a disability?
With a disability, not to be...
Okay.
Well, for consultation, it doesn't matter. I mean, we work with anybody to help mm-hmm. them in terms of planning, in terms of looking, if they want to look ahead to the future and kind of have an idea of what's out there or what the costs are, then we can help them with that. If they're looking for eligibility for publicly funded programs, they have to meet both a functional screen, meaning that they have to have a certain level of disability, and they have to meet the Medicaid eligibility screen, financial and functional eligibility. The tool that's used to determine functional eligibility is established by the state. It's the same tool that people in ADRCs throughout the state use to and questions, things that they look at to determine whether a person needs assistance.
I here's where I'm confused. I mean, an elderly person, and I, you know, sometimes we all have a tendency to use our own personal experiences in these things. My father would fit. My father was, in his throes of dying at the time, so he obviously is incapacitated. We could someone like myself use for in his behalf use some of these services or is that
not? Oh yes,
not?
Yes.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Because, his services were in Minnesota, which was similar to ours, is going through looking even at Medicaid is incredibly difficult for any person. And I went through it with my sisters who actually are nurses, and we're like, you gotta be kidding me. I wanted to throw that thing away four times and said, and I'm in the insurance business, I even called some consultants on this that I know, and they said, oh, they're, yeah, welcome to the real world. So we don't do that well. That's a separate issue, not yours, but okay. Because I'm just saying is, there's not one, I can't imagine one person that is goes through that can understand it. Even if they're extremely sharp people and not disabled and not and need to go somewhere to get someone's help on that, and I don't know if that would be more of a state responsibility or the counties or
no, we work with them to help to help understand when we can the resource and the staff can help them with kind of the basic understanding what they need to go through and get them started on the application process. We also have some of the economic support staff in the county under Abilene's division. They actually do the financial eligibility for Medicaid. However, we have several of them located. They're located in our office, the ones that help with long-term care needs. So we do have people coming to see them and going through the long-term care eligibility.
Are those the benefit specialists?
No,
they
the benefit specialist is separate. That's different. They work, the benefit specialists help people with, they could assist with if the person has a problem with Medicaid, but they'll be, they deal with a lot of Medicare issues, Social Security, Medicare, housing, okay. Other veterans benefits.
And Medicare pays for how many days of rehabilitative services. Now, this isn't a quiz. I was just curious.
Yeah.
is it 30 days?
In a nursing home, it can be up to 90 and possibly 120 as long as the patient's making progress. But generally, it's 90 days in a nursing home.
For rehab services?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
After post-hospitalization.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Do you do the visiting nurses and, people that actually go to the senior housing? I mean, if they're living by themselves, I mean, that's what I'm hearing, the nursing homes, it's cheaper to keep them in their house.
Well, it depends, and one of the reasons why the state is funding ADRCs is because they want people to be aware of that there are options besides nursing homes, because nursing homes are so expensive, and Wisconsin had a higher rate of nursing home utilization than the rate in the country. But we do the eligibility screening and enrollment into into family care or one of the, what they call the Medicaid waiver programs. It gets a little complicated, so I don't know how much we want to get into it. But the Medicaid waiver programs, like family care, allow people to get services in the home as an alternative to nursing homes. So we do the eligibility and the enrollment, but then the people choose the care management organization that they want to actually run to arrange the care for them. So if they pick, for instance, the Community Care Incorporated, they will then they will have a case manager who works with them and develops a case plan, and then they will purchase the visiting nurses or equipment or other services that they might need. In some cases, if the person needs assisted living or in the case of a developmentally disabled person, as a group home, then they could purchase those services as well.
It's a tremendous service.
Wow. So basically, you do the paperwork, get them eligible, and direct them to an organization that will help them with their needs. Okay.
Now, several years ago, we did that. It was the county that that had some dollars to purchase the care, and we actually contracted with an agency for the case managers. We purchased the care, so we had a lot of contracts with home health agencies. Then the state wanted multi-county, and at that time we had a waiting list of over 400 people. So, and we waited and we waited, and finally we got family care, and then we were able to eliminate the waiting list. At the time, we were going to, like a couple of the original counties, going to be have our own care management organization. That was the direction we were going. And then the state decided that they wanted to have multi-county organizations. And we weren't willing, the county or the county executive wasn't willing, and I don't think the county board members who were involved in the discussion thought that we ought to be liable for other counties and didn't want to take that risk, because there is a risk involved in doing that. So now private entities are doing that. Milwaukee County still has a care management organization. That's probably more information than you wanted. I listed here the elderly benefit, elderly and disability benefits, benefit assistance. We have benefit specialists who do help people with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, et cetera, and do the Medicare workshops, so that people who are going on to Medicare can be more knowledgeable about it. Financial impact in 2013, I don't have the figures yet for 14, was over $1 million. And the way that we measure that is, like, if it's a one-time reimbursement for, say, something with Medicare, then they would get we would count that amount of money, or the value. If it's if it's a monthly payment, then we would consider the value for a year. The amount of money, if you measure it in monetary terms, the value for the individuals who were served. The equipment loan closet, I love that program, because it for a very low cost, it helps a lot of people. We started that a number of years ago in collaboration with other agencies, with Society's Assets and Easter Seals and some others. And we store the equipment. We get donations of equipment, and we store it in the Human Services building. John was nice enough to let us have space there. And people borrow equipment to who may need it for a family member, for themselves, for a short term, or it could be longer term. And sometimes they don't know what kind of equipment they need, and they don't want to go and spend a lot of money for something that they don't know if they can will work for them, or they might need it for a short term. So we've loaned out wheelchairs, bath benches, toilet risers, walkers, canes, commodes, and we have a whole host of other equipment. We also get some incontinence products that are that we're able to give out to, you know, that somebody might, a family member might buy a lot of supplies, and then the loved one dies, and so they donate it to us, and we can give that out to somebody else who may need it. We are getting some donations. We're kind of changed our system for requesting donations, and I think we'll start to see more money contributed for that service. Transition services, I mentioned, that's for, we work with the schools to help advise families as to what they need to do to transition. If they have a child with a severe disability that's likely to need in-home support as they transition into adulthood, then we work with them and help them navigate that system. Support for family caregivers. You mentioned about family members, and that we do a lot of that. We spend a lot of time with families. We do have some pots of money that that can be used for short-term respite for a family if they need time to themselves, if they're caring for a loved one 24/7, and they just need some time to get away or to take care of their own personal business. We can provide some respite for that. We also have caregiver support groups and a class that we conduct called Powerful Tools for Caregivers. It was a program developed by Stanford University and is evidence-based to help people with stress and reduce caregiver depression. Dementia services. The state now has embarked on a dementia the name, what they're calling it, but it's really a campaign to support services for people with dementia. They're looking at the statistics and the number of people, the population climbing with Alzheimer's and other dementia, and wanting to see what can be done to make sure that to help people maintain their independence as long as possible. We received funding. It started with grant funding. It looks like it's going to be ongoing for a dementia care specialist. That person can meet with individuals and families and help them in planning and learning what services are available. We've been doing memory screens throughout the county. It's a way of having people. It doesn't diagnose dementia, but can let people know if it appears that they may have some difficulty. We would make recommendations for them to see a doctor or and connect them with other services that are available. Part of that, the grant that we receive is a LEAPS program, which is it's a program we contract out with CAFASI to Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services. It links volunteers with a person at early stages of dementia, and it's two is evidence based to that they have found that it slows the progression, that the exercise that they do, they work with them, they do exercises with the individuals, and then they also take them out. They have two visits a week, and they have found that can slow the progression of dementia.
Do you mean all physical, or do you mean mental exercises too?
Physical exercises.
How many people are involved in this area, would you say?
In the LEAPS program, just a handful of people. It's kind of slow to catch on. And
they're with a different organization, right?
Yes.
Okay. And dementia care specialist, how many we have?
We have one dementia
care. A county person?
Contracted, but located at the ADRC.
But it's counted, yeah, okay. Just one?
Yes. Well, I mean, the other information and assistant staff can provide assistance as well, but she's a specialist funded under this grant.
Mm. What kind? Oh, sorry.
I was going to say that seems low, very low. I'm surprised.
Do we know what the percentage of
actually, Supervisor Blau had a question. I think.
Sorry.
Then Supervisor, trying to get a little bit.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. For the LEAPS program, do you, the volunteers have to have special qualifications in order to volunteer?
Not qualifications so much as, I mean, they'd have to pass a caregiver or background check, but, you know, to make sure that the, there's no criminal background, but they get training by the program coordinator.
So anybody, once they pass the background check?
Yeah.
Okay.
Supervisor Johnson?
Do you know offhand, just kind of ballpark, what's the rate of occurrence for dementia in the elderly? I mean, like, say, get over 75 in that area, what's the rate of occurrence?
We are seeing more more early onset dementia.
Absolutely.
More than we used to. And that's very difficult because the person usually is more physically strong, and that's where we have sometimes real behavior issues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They've done studies on why orchestra conductors live so long. And two things have surfaced as being the main reason. One is upper body movement. The other is mental concentration. And those two things together have helped preserve longevity. I mean, orchestra conductors live to be 80, 90 years old. They're in some ways, they are the fossils of music next to the composers that they exhibit. We're grateful to have them.
That being said, genetics has a lot too. My in-laws lived to be their mid-90s and drank and smoked until they were in their 80s.
Or cross genders, across ethnicities, throughout the whole profession. I mean, the standard is to live well until you're 70, 80, 90 years old.
Or if you're a school teacher.
My grandmother died at 101. My mother's 92.
Never done.
Her younger sister is 90. Her other sister is 89. And her younger brother is, I think, 83. You know, and they all...
Teachers died.
My mother quit. I took her car away last year. I
they
mean,
don't.
So, I mean...
They have their own mortality, too.
You know, I don't... Dementia, but like I say, I know people that are in their 60s that are...
That have dementia, yeah.
There's definitely an environmental component going on with it. It's increased, though, lately.
Since we're taking questions, I want to ask this right quick before I forget. Any of the folks that you interact with, do they have any involvement? Does the Affordable Care Act touch them in any kind of way, or is that sort of a completely separate population of folks?
We actually, no, it isn't. We had some funding last year to for somebody that was that we had helping with the Affordable Care Act, and we're still doing some of that now. No, but particularly people between, we had people with disabilities certainly that come to, because that's part of our target population. We also had people between who are 60, between 60 and 65, who were looking for health insurance. We had, there were definitely, we had people over the years who were really looking for Social Security disability, largely because they wanted access to health insurance, to Medicare. And so hopefully the Affordable Care Act will address some of that.
When you talk about a older adult, how do you define disability?
Well, it depends on the program, because for age, for instance, for some programs it might be 65. For Older Americans Act programs, it's age 60 and over. For disability, it would be, we're looking at a developmental disability or physical disability. Strictly for providing information, we don't really have very strict guidelines. You know, we can provide information or help lead them somewhere. For the eligibility for different services, usually there has to be some functional impairment, something that would cause them, for instance, to get a pass for caravan to ride the bus. They have to be unable to ride the city bus. And some people think because they have one particular disability that they should be eligible to take the caravan. and we may have to say, no, you are still able to take the city bus. But for another program, like for family care, they would have to have limitations that that would interfere with their being able to do their own personal cares and to, yeah, where they wouldn't be able to function by themselves.
Like the seven daily functions and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Can I really quickly? I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but in every odd numbered year, 2011, 2013, 2015, the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau issues informational papers that cover many areas of state government. One year they did 106, this year they did 99. The large component of that is always human services stuff. And so some of the questions you're asking are probably answered in informational paper number 48, Services for Disabilities. Some of the others, informational paper number 42 on medical assistance. Some of the other things earlier tonight come from informational paper number 49, mental illness. And the Affordable Care Act stuff is in informational paper number 52. So if you want to, you know, at your leisure, take a look at those. It goes through some of that so that we don't have to get so deep into the weeds. It'll explain a lot of that eligibility stuff, and it's in plain English. You know, a seventh grader could go through it and understand it. It's not difficult. So we may in the future with some of these things start attaching that as part of the packet so that we have that foundation to work off of when we meet.
Do you have the link or where you can find that?
No, I can send it. Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Email.
Yes. Thank you.
Just, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but just we, under health and wellness, we have been involved. Actually, we started years ago when we had the waiting list and we didn't have family care. We said we were interested in a program called the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program out of Stanford University. We applied for funding at the time. We got it, and we started what now has been spread throughout Wisconsin. Now it's called Living Well with Chronic Conditions. It's a 7-week class to help people better manage their own chronic conditions. From that, we have spread to falls prevention programs, a program called Stepping On, which is also a class, I believe an 8-week class. Sure Step, which is an in-home intervention for falls prevention. We also facilitate a falls coalition with other organizations, which has taken several steps towards prevention. Now we're also doing a diabetes self-management class and a class under a grant, a program called Lighten Up to increase well-being and reduce depression among older adults. Then in terms of outreach and education, I just wanted you to, we do a lot of outreach, a lot of educational programs. The educational programs so that people know better how to manage various aspects of their lives and are aware of services and approaches to caregiving. But we also do outreach so that people are aware of the resource center, and that's part of the requirement of by the state for being a resource center. So we do a lot of marketing. You'll see our ads in the paper. We've got people going out and doing presentations. That's all part of our responsibility. But I also wanted to point out that we have last Monday of the month, My Life, which is I don't know if any of you remember the Chronicle, which we had it used to be the Senior Chronicle, and then it was the Chronicle, and that was mailed to over 10,000 senior households, and that was an arrangement that we had with the Kenosha News. This is also an arrangement with the Kenosha News. They solicit and pay for the printing through themselves. We don't have to pay for that. When we had the Chronicle, we did pay for the mailing costs of it, and we still mail My Life to some people who don't receive the Kenosha News. But now, this is inserted. This My Life has taken the place of the Chronicle, and it's inserted in the Kenosha News on the last Monday.
The Kenosha News covers the cost of it. through advertisements.
Yes.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's very nice of them.
Win-win.
It's a very, very nice thing for them to do.
So with my life, we have tried to be a little bit more intergenerational. Chronicle was focused largely on older people, but we're trying to be a little bit more intergenerational and make sure that we reach people with disabilities as well and family caregivers. We want family caregivers to be aware of our services because often they're the people that call when they're concerned about mom and dad. I won't get into adult protective services tonight. That's kind of a whole set of information in itself. But we do have the adult protective services are located in our office, and people do call with concerns, whether it's a well-being check or concern about abuse or neglect of an older adult or a person with an adult with disabilities as well.
I'm assuming that has some relationship to agenda item number 6?
Yes.
You want a little bit? I know you don't want to dive too deep into it, but at least a little bit.
So people, we do, the Adult Protective Services Unit does the investigation reports of physical abuse, neglect, financial exploitation, which is on the rise. We do guardianships for people who are unable to, who are deemed incompetent and unable to care for themselves, protective placements. We have been helping with powers of attorney for health care and trying to promote that, encourage people to do that. And we also have a volunteer guardian program to try to find volunteers who will act as guardians, because otherwise we often have to pay for a corporate guardian. For individuals. I mentioned about the economic support staff who are located at the ADRC, and they do the Medicaid eligibility for nursing home care, long-term care, and some of the community Medicaid programs. I just also wanted to mention that we have a mental health and substance abuse resource center, which sometime when we talk about our mental health services, we can talk more about that. I just wanted you to be aware that that's in a separate building. That's in the Kenosha Human Development Services. So that's the nutshell.
Any other questions? Agenda item 6, informational item, new social work supervisor position in the Division of Aging and Disability Services.
For many years, as the adult protective services staff started to grow and the needs, the referrals and the needs grew, we had contracted with Goodwill to provide the coordination and three of what are now 6 social workers with the unit. The person who had been in the position for 17 years just left, and it was an opportunity to do what we've been thinking about for a number of years, is to convert that to a county position. Because of the level of the responsibility and the liability with that position, we felt that it would be better to have that should be a county position. And also we thought that we would have an opportunity to attract more qualified candidates for the position. So it was approved by Jen and by the personnel department and by the finance committee to convert that. There's no additional cost. We are reducing our contracted costs and then increasing the personnel costs for that position.
Is this in the last budget?
Yeah, didn't we approve this?
No,
last month?
Not the Human Services Committee.
No,
the
board.
It went before. Yes. Yeah. So
yeah.
Just down here to.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. You had questions from that, so it didn't require this committee's approval. We wanted to share the rationale behind it.
It doesn't.
It's already approved
it's
by the board.
It's been approved by the board.
We approved it upstairs.
Yeah. It's an explanation for that. Thank you, folks. Right. Yes.
Unfortunately, timing didn't work before we could get here. So,
yeah.
They and so this person has. You're still looking for this person,
right? Yes.
Is that difficult or not so difficult? I mean, finding a qualified, is that a difficult thing, person
we'll
to find?
No, it was just posted this past weekend, so.
You're looking in-house or are you looking?
We're looking everywhere. We also have some networks like within the state where we can get word out about positions as well. So we're hoping that we attract both in-house and outside candidates so that we can find the best person for the job.
Any other questions? What does the caseload look like for social workers in AD, aging and disability, and dads?
Well, for the with Adult Protective Services, the number that we try to open and work with the cases and then close them as soon as we can to move with a plan a risk reduction plan in place. There we're looking at opening and closing cases. They move more quickly, so a caseload at any time should not be more than 25 at that time. It's not, these are not ongoing cases for the most part. These are investigations and trying to mitigate the circumstances that are causing the risk.
Average length of time for investigation?
It depends. If it's something like with potential physical abuse, that can go very quickly. Financial exploitation is very difficult and involves a lot of investigation. Those can go on for a longer period of time.
Questions? Anybody?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Agenda item 7, such other business is authorized by law. I don't believe there is any committee member comments. I have one, unless anybody has anything. I apologize for being late. I will try not to let that happen again. Today was the first day of second semester, and with the snow, things are crazy, and I'm trying to work out the schedule. I was in the gym, and I'm like, oh, I have committee in a half hour. So
happens.
I apologize.
Happens.
You'll be beaten later.
I'm sure you'll do a good job with that. Agenda item number 9. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
My Supervisor Johnson, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Bob.
Think when I go home?
Yes.
Committee?
Aye.
Committee is adjourned.
No.
See, they will jump at that.
Yes.
Everybody's been like, I'm like,
that's impressive. No.
Okay.
Like, you don't want to do this.
No help.